I'm trying more to get people to like think about how these systems work than necessarily say like, this one is wrong for this specific reason. These seem like extremely technical problems, but they're really more about like, how are we making decisions? Like they're really human issues. And so even if you don't understand the details about how a neural network system works, or like, what is the algorithm that's used to decide exactly who gets healthcare when, some people definitely need to understand that. But you can also just look at the outcomes and say, however you made this decision, it doesn't seem like it's implementing the values that I think are important.
You're listening to What the Tech, a podcast powered by the Computer Science Department of UCalgary, here to deconstruct complex computer science concepts bit by bit and explain what the tech is going on. My name is Paolo.
My name is Lynn.
On this episode, we talk to Kath Blair, a PhD student in the Computational Media Design program here at UCalgary. Today, we cover how Kath uses tech as a creative medium to get people thinking about the impact of algorithms in day-to-day life. We also talk about CMDSA and the science takeover. Without further ado, please welcome our guest, Kath Blair.
So welcome to the show, Kath.
Hi.
So why don't you tell us who you are, what you're currently doing, and just a quick overview of any kind of current positions or projects you're working on.
Sure. My name's Kath Blair. I am a PhD student in computational media design here at the University of Calgary. And some of the things that I'm currently working on, my research is about using art installations to get the public talking about how do we use algorithms in society and hopefully like connect their perspectives to the computer scientists and the institutions that make some of the decisions about those algorithms. So that's kind of my main focus right now. I'm sort of in the middle of candidacy. And then I've been working on some projects recently about using improv as a design tool for design fiction, as well as I'm quite involved with the computational media design program itself. And I'm also usually involved in an organization in town called Make Fashion, which is like technology and fashion. And I also I'm working on a project about where art students are using technology to kind of design mental health, like do some experimentation around how can you use wearable technology for mental health applications. And that's a project I'm helping with.
Wow, there's so much unpack in that.
That's great. So we'll go to unpack the rest of that throughout the episode. But what we like to do is kind of get an idea of where you started. And So usually what we like to ask is, when did you first know you wanted to go into computer science? But you didn't study computer science.
I kind of got into technology as a teenager. I first got a home computer when I was 12, which was a little bit late. And I got really into Neopets. And then I got excited that I could like make the Neopets page look cool with HTML. And so that's how I learned programming, Which is totally ludicrous, but it was fun. And then so I got into programming basically that way. And then I did my Bachelor of Fine Arts at UBC in Vancouver. And there I got to do a little bit of physical computing, so using Arduino and in some of the art classes there. And that was really exciting for me. I was like, I can program and make things happen in like real life, like physically move and stuff like that. So that was really exciting for me. And that's how I kind of got into using technology as a way to make art.
Interesting. It's crazy. But you still wanted to focus on art. What was the kind of the motivation behind that and not like go straight into something like very heavy computer science?
For me, it's like, what is the goal of what you're doing? And while I really like making things with technology, I'm usually like less interested in pushing that technical element forward and really, really interested in like, what are the ideas involved? What are the implications of the systems that we use on our society? And I feel like art is a really great way to explore those things. You can say kind of provocative things through art that get people to think about these issues. Yeah. And so that's why, to me, since one of my main interests with technology is like, how do we use it? How do we relate to it? Keeping that connection with art feels really important, or is really important to me for kind of like why I'm interested in it. Whereas focusing more on like pushing the technical elements forward wasn't as much what I wanted to focus on. I was kind of starting to be aware of what you could do. You know, I did a lot of art using technology. I would do like websites as art projects and stuff like that throughout my undergrad. But I didn't know about, like, I hadn't run into the Arduino platform before. And that as a platform for like working with hardware is really accessible and really exciting. And so as soon as I discovered that that was a thing, I was like, oh, I just need to use this all the time. And so I started using that maybe my like third year of my undergrad. And then as I finished out my undergrad, it was like a pretty big focus of what I was doing.
And so what exactly is the Arduino
platform? Yeah, it's like a really small microcomputer, microchip, and it has, it's got like just a really simple computer chip on it that you can program. It doesn't have like an OS or anything like that. So it's not, it's simpler than a Raspberry Pi. It's got like 1K of memory on it. And so you can do really, really simple programs with it, but it's meant as an open hardware platform. So you can connect sensors and connect output. So you can use it to like connect a light sensor to a motor, or you know, play songs when something happens in the environment. So you can use it to create a lot of interactive like installations is how it gets used a lot by artists. You could also use it for prototyping like physical technology elements. Yeah, it's really great. And it's really easy to get into, which is super exciting.
Okay, awesome. Well, that's for everyone that's kind of looking for that kind of stuff. That's a great recommendation.
So fun.
Yeah. I'm curious, was there a specific project that you did with the Arduino like platforms that was kind of memorable?
Yeah, I would say one of the ones that was my favorite, one of the first ones that we did, this was in a group project, and it was kind of like making this living room that everyone was involved in this class. Mm. And the part that I was working on with another small, like a small group of students, was using a sound sensor in the room. So we had an Arduino that was connected to this microphone, and it would just like pipe the sound level from the room into a computer that was running a program called MaxMSP. And then that would play a video, and the video was projected on the window. And so it would show like a garden scene, and there was more people in the garden if there were more people in the room. That was how it was supposed to work anyway.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was fun.
So moving out of the bachelor's program, you decided to go to the University of Calgary for a master's in fine arts. What led you to coming over to Calgary and leaving the nice warm weather of British Columbia?
Well, I mean, I'm from Calgary, so I was coming back home. And I had been back in Calgary. Like there was 7 years between my undergrad and my coming back for my master's. Yes. So I was working in town. And one of the main reasons I decided to come back is that I had so much involvement with Make Fashion. Make Fashion is a wearable technology fashion show here in Calgary, and it's been going since 2013. Didn't have a 2020 show because there wasn't Beakerhead to be part of. but from 2013 through 2019, I've been creating projects for Make Fashion, and realized that I really wanted to dig into like what that relationship between people and technology was. And in Make Fashion, since it's all fashion-based, it's all wearable, that connection between like the body and technology is really something that I think about a lot. And so I really wanted to like dig into that as a conceptual element. So that's why I came back to the MFA.
Cool. And that you just kind of, that was 2 years, and then you just decided to continue on and just say, hey, let's get a PhD in CMD. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Where I ended up, I didn't end up staying on the idea of like the wearable elements. Right. I got much more focused on like how society and people interact through technology, or like the sort of interchange between the technical systems that we put in place, but then also what their actual impact is on people. So I my final installation for my MFA was on that topic, but I felt like I hadn't kind of pushed it as far as I could, or like exhausted all of what was there. So I decided to continue that theme in a bit of a different way in my PhD.
And so how did the TELUS Spark sort of play into the PhD kind of time frame?
Yeah, sure. So I worked at Spark from 2013 to 2018. Mm. And I really enjoyed my time there. I was a public programmer. And what I really enjoyed about that is that I really got to think about how to engage members of the public with like scientific topics and in a really like open and inquiry-based way. I mean, I was doing programming for adults as opposed to like, you know, most of what I did wasn't with children. And that was one of the reasons I had decided to go back and do the MFA. And it also really fed into what I ended up deciding to do both in the MFA and my final installation and in the PhD because of wanting to use the installations that I'm creating as a way to engage the public with the technical systems that kind of now, because algorithmic systems are like such a big part of the way that institutions make decisions about people or about anything. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that like we as members of the public have a way to think about that. And so that interactive programming that I was doing at Spark really fed into my wish to engage the public with these kind of wider topics. But I just didn't have a chance to do that while I'm like, you know, running a monthly event and, you know, obviously I can't just make all the Spark programming about the thing that I, my own personal hobby horse.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's guidelines and curriculums.
Well, no, it's not like there wasn't really curriculums, but it was more like, you know, you want to have different topics. How to like engage partner organizations and get them to come in and do stuff. Like you can't just, you know, make them all about the same thing all the time.
Yeah, that's fair. In terms of like these algorithms that, you know, we've mentioned a couple times, like what's the kind of impact?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always struggle with when talking about this is that like it has fairly recently, like, you know, now it's possible to store a bunch of data about all of us and what we do all the time, you know, and so now these stores of data about like everything we do exist, and then and that's pretty recent. So it's only just becoming kind of like such a big issue. And then it becomes hard to like talk through all of the elements of it because there's like so many bits of it that have just exploded recently. But some examples are well-known ones would be like the Facebook newsfeed algorithm, helping determine kind of what you see online or what you know about, or things like there are a bunch of places that will use algorithms to determine where police should go. As well as algorithms that determine how to allocate healthcare resources, and algorithms that like make trades on the stock market all the time. And all of those are like individual examples, but they actually all kind of come together to make all of these layered decisions that impact each other in like really hard to predict ways. And so it's both this thing that seems very, or that can seem very like technical. Often, you know, the companies that develop the algorithms and sell them to like, you know, your municipality that's going to efficiently allocate their police resources and stuff like that. They will say like, oh, we have this great, you know, very well-designed algorithm. Like you kind of don't need to worry about how it works or the details of that. Usually that's not public. They're all like different algorithms used by different organizations, but then they all like impact together because they're all acting on like all of us. And so giving specific examples is definitely totally possible, but then it's all like also how they all layer together that I'm interested in. And I kind of want to get people thinking about.
So you do these public art installations.
Yeah.
That expose the inherent flaws in various programs, right?
Sort of. I'm trying more to get people to like think about how these systems work than necessarily say like, this one is wrong for this specific reason.
Right. And so what does that look like?
Yeah. Right. Totally. So the ones that I'm working on right now, I'm at kind of a bit of a change point in what I'm working on because I was in the summer, I was like, oh, I'm going to be starting to do, this is in my PhD where I'm going to be starting to do the installations. That'll be great. And then COVID-19 happened and they were all going to be like, people stand in a room and touch things. So I can't do that anymore. So now I'm hoping to do some that end up looking like basically alternate reality games that people can participate in and kind of like explore some of these interconnected systems together. I like getting people to be part of the decision-making system and like impact each other. So probably it'll end up looking a little bit like, alternate reality games that people can participate in, probably using their phones so they don't have to be co-located, but they can still kind of physically participate. Getting people sort of at like moving and actively involved is something that I'm really interested in. And then for my, one of the other concrete examples I can give is for my MFA installation, which was sort of a very early version of this, is I had created these puzzles that were based on logic puzzles. And so they were set up on blackboards and they were little like magnetic tiles that you could move around to finish the logic puzzle. So like they were all in the form, if A is B and if B is C, then you can conclude that A is C. So then, but they were all based on the algorithms, like, if Facebook shows me only posts that are similar to other ones I've liked, and you never post anything that's similar to what I've liked, then Facebook never shows me anything you post, like stuff like that.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
That thank you for that actually does a lot to kind of help us understand.
Yeah, make it more concrete.
Exactly. It's not like
weird.
It is a very, very like important topic to like, you know, even start to break down. Both Lyndon and I actually just recently watched that Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma.
I haven't watched that one yet.
You're gonna love it.
Something that you're kind of like interested in about, like they talk about the algorithm the entire time and just like its effect on society as a whole and like how massive this is and like the impact is so much more than like we could even imagine. And it happens in the background that we don't even know it's happening for a lot of the time that, you know, we're just on social media. We think it's purely harmless. Like
a lot of them, you can't even really like opt out of it because, credit scores or things that are going to make a decision about whether you get a loan based on what your postal code is and stuff like that, or what your loan rate is based on your postal code. Like you can't just not do that. It's not something that you decided. You weren't like, not that necessarily opting out of social media is an option, but there's a lot of them where like, even if you were not online at all, you can't not participate in them.
Yeah.
No,
that's totally true. But I think that, I think honestly what you're doing, like Netflix has their way of kind of spreading their kind of message through documentary. I think what you're doing though could really help, especially with this whole like COVID-19 thing, right? Like, you know, you have these like virtual reality games, like people will engage with that.
I'm hoping tremendously.
Right.
Yeah. I'm hoping. I'm excited about, I'm kind of like scared because I had all these really specific plans and I was like, oh, it's going to be like this. And then COVID-19 happened. I'm like, oh, I guess I have to change all the things I'm doing. Okay. So I'm still a little bit in like, what do I do? And I'm still in the process of figuring that all out, but yeah.
Well, if you want a nice title for the game, I recommend The Socially Distanced Dilemma.
There you go. Cool.
I guess looking forward with the whole like art and exposing algorithms piece, like what do you hope to like achieve?
Yeah. So what I'm hoping to kind of do with them, one thing I'm really excited about is I'm going to be doing three of these installations as part of my PhD and then interviewing visitors who come to see them and kind of talking about like what was their experience. And just to get a better understanding of like, how are people thinking about these topics and what are good ways to engage people with them? So then after I've done those three installations, I'm going to be like combining the elements of them and what I've learned from doing those interviews into kind of a final installation. And then using that or kind of proposing that as a way for computer scientists and also institutions that use these types of systems to directly engage with the public, to talk to them about it. And hopefully like I'd hope that they can become a communication channel as well as a way to raise awareness and get people thinking about this. I don't really wanna, I think there are lots of good attempts in journalism to inform people about these issues. Like there's lots of really great journalism and really great documentaries that are about these topics. And I think that's extremely important. And so one of the things that I think art can offer and, you know, particularly installations or things that you engage with more actively and you have to make your own decisions while you're doing them than, you know, reading an article is get people to think about how does this make them feel and like what are their values and how do their values intersect with this. And so if we can use those as a tool both to get the public thinking about this and get the public willing to critique these systems and like talk about them, and also use them as a tool to like get feedback to the institutions that are creating these algorithms. Like that's kind of my overall goal.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. It's like that teach kind of don't tell mentality of, yeah, just like get them to learn it on their own and instead of like bombarding them through the news cycle or a documentary or whatever with just like, here's what it is kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think also like, these seem like extremely technical problems, but they're really more about like, how are we making decisions? Like they're really human issues. And so even if you don't understand the details about how a neural network system works or like, what is the algorithm that's used to decide exactly who gets healthcare when, some people definitely need to understand that, but you can also just look at the outcomes and say, however you made this decision, it, you know, it doesn't seem like it's meeting, it doesn't seem like it's, you know, implementing the values that I think are important. So even if I don't understand all of these details, I can still say like, no government, don't do it that way. Yeah. The sort of technical complexity can be used as kind of like a screen or like oh, you don't know, it's fine. You know, don't worry about it. But even if it is really technically complex, it doesn't mean that members of the general public who are not experts can't critique it.
Yeah. And definitely like it is a very like scary challenge or obstacle that does face a lot of people who are concerned and like, you know, you hear the word algorithm, all these things in social media or just anywhere in the news all the time. And you're like, what is this really about? But I like your point, right? Like this is a human issue and there's like a lot of other things other than the technical complexities that are going on here. And that's an awesome point, and love that your art installations and whole project there is definitely on a good path there.
I'm excited about it.
Do you think that you coming from like that arts background though kind of allows you to kind of see through, well, and the technical, I guess, because you have the training as well, but having that arts background, do you think that allows you to kind of just be like, hey, look, this is not all this like technical jargon, it's actually about like human decisions? Like does that provide you with a little bit more of that lens kind of?
I think it's definitely a useful perspective. I think both elements of those parts of my background kind of really inform how I work. But I also don't want to imply that like computer scientists aren't thinking about this. Like they are, you know, that they definitely are very concerned about it. And a lot of, you know, a lot of computer scientists are really doing a bunch of research about it and, you know, approaching it in from computer science perspectives. Like there's a lot of work being done on explainable algorithms and explainable artificial intelligence that's also meant to address some of these issues. And there's definitely lots of work in like legal scholars are doing a lot of work on this, and so are social scientists. And so I think one of the things that I think really that the art perspective I think really adds to it is wanting to get people thinking about it, wanting to like provoke thought and get people, you know, sometimes it's okay to make people a little bit uncomfortable about it, but you also want to bring them into this conversation. And then that combined with the science communication experience I have at Spark, kind of all of those things come together to give me, I think, a unique set of tools to bring to this conversation. And so that's one of the reasons I'm so excited about it.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. Moving to, you know, we hear you've been doing some stuff with CMDSA.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Sure. So the CMDSA is the Computational Media Design Students Association. Yeah. And we're a fairly new students association under the Graduate Students Association like umbrella. And we are really here to build some community within the computational media design students. So we do things like, right now we're doing a weekly coffee on Wednesday afternoon so that everyone can just kind of see each other's faces. And you know, we'll do like, last year we got to do some like Christmas parties and lunches and stuff like that. And so this year we're like, oh, we'll make those be more online. Yeah. Ways to get for the students in computational media design to get to know each other. Yeah. It's a fairly small program, but everyone has supervisors in computer science and then also in their like art discipline, because everybody in the program is combining computer science and then like a design or art background. And so we can often feel very like disconnected from each other because, you know, we'll be like sit in our lab with the other computer science students that we work really closely with, or, you know, be in the art, whatever art department our other supervisor is in. And so it can feel very like atomized and, like you don't know anybody. So, the CMDSA is really trying to like build some ways of chatting between each other. You know, we've got like even just a Slack channel so that we can all chat with each other occasionally. Yeah, that's really the goal.
That's awesome. Is there like any major planned events or activities that you guys have in store for the upcoming like semesters or?
Right now we're still kind of getting rolling and figuring out like what we can do in COVID-19. I think one of the things that we're going to start doing is have talk options for each other so that A, we can figure out like what each other is doing. And we have quite a few students who are going to be going through their candidacy exams. And so we all need to do presentations for that. So that'll be one of the things. I think that's kind of one of the main things we're focusing on. We had a lot of plans for this year when we were going to be here. And then now we're all like, oh no. And we're really focusing on like giving each other just opportunities to see each other's faces.
Yeah.
It is huge. It is very, very important. I definitely underestimated the impact that it would have to not see.
Totally. People. Yeah.
Yeah. And are you the like original pioneer of CMDSA or?
Yes, but it's not like, we started last year and there just wasn't, because it's a very small program. There's 20 of us, 22 of us. Yeah. So like before that, we just didn't have no one had done the paperwork. Yeah. And so I basically was like, oh, all right, I'll fill in this form. All right, we exist now. We're just a very new organization, but we're really hoping to give CMD students like a place to come and figure out how to navigate the program because it can be very challenging. Like often professors who are supervising students, their main program home is not CMD. Yeah. And so it can be very, like we have questions and, you know, we'll ask our supervisors and they'll say like, we'll ask the program and then the program staff change. And then the program staff are like, oh, I'll go look that up. And it's, that can be really tough for students. So yeah, we're really trying to, on an ad hoc basis, just be like a source of help and commiseration in confusion and like, you know, help people hunt down information that can be challenging to get, especially, you know, when administrative structures are changing. which we've been going through a lot right now, and everyone has.
Yeah. And so who can kind of get involved with CMDSA?
Yeah. So CMDSA, like the membership, is all of the computational media design students. So all CMD students are members, and they can be involved and come to our events. If other people are sort of like interested in learning more about the program or talking to the students, they should definitely get in touch with us. And we'd be happy to like either involve them in some of our events or have them, you know, meet some of our students. There are a lot of students doing really interesting work in CMD. So like we would all be extremely interested in like making more connections across campus.
Awesome. That's awesome. And so one kind of switching gears one more time here, one other thing that we saw you did was the science takeover. What's that all about?
Sure. So Science Takeover is a program developed, I think, largely by Christine Sharp in the Faculty of Science. And it was a last year, I know they did it in person, and they kind of like went and did a whole bunch of programming in the downtown library, like the new Central Library, and brought a whole bunch of science-related programming to all of the library patrons there that day. And this year, because of COVID-19, it had to be like an online takeover. So Christine worked with all of the people in the Faculty of Science to pull together a lot of science programs from many different disciplines and offered them to like the general public via the Calgary Public Library. And I know it's part of Science Literacy Week, which is a national event that runs every year. So really exciting way for like anyone to get an inside view on some of the kind of exciting stuff going on at the University of Calgary.
Yeah. And what did you, what capacity were you kind of involved with that?
So I was really excited to participate. I proposed a program for it. And so it was called When Brains Meet Circuits. And I worked with Dr. Emma Towelson, who's a new faculty member, and she's joining. And you guys are nodding. I hope you guys have chatted with her.
Yes, really cool. We actually have.
She's so cool. I really loved working with her because I hadn't met her before that. So yeah, Leanne Wu connected us. And her research is so fascinating about like modeling how the C. elegans worms make decisions. And I had wanted to do, I'd done like a little bit of a pilot test for one of my installations, like, you know, thinking about how am I going to do this with COVID-19. One of the things I was thinking about was having like each person be a node in a neural network and like passing, making a decision and passing information to each other. So we actually did that with the library patrons, where we talked a little bit about neural networks. Emma talked a little bit about like modeling and trying to understand the C. elegans and how they've now mapped all, like they've made a connectome of the entire C. elegans brain and trying to understand how it makes decisions.
Which is the worm, right?
Yeah, C. elegans is a worm, sorry. and so then we had, we got all of the patrons to like help us decide how the C. elegans would make a part of its decision to cross like a hazard to go get some food. And then we combined all of their, like all of the kind of things that they thought would be most important or how they would make that decision. We combined it all together. And then they also like told us the weights, because in neural networks, one of the ways that each node is kind of joined together is based on like the weight of that node or how important it is in the overall decision. And so so then they all ranked everything, and that we use that to determine the weights. And then we like kind of generated an environment that the worm was in, and then we checked like if we had been a neural network that was trying to predict the decision of a C. elegans worm, like what would our worm have done? At the end of the program, we kind of said, okay, like our worm would not have gone to get the food. So in Dr. Towelson's research, she would then like compare that to like what did real worms do, and see how correct the model was.
That is so cool.
And it was like so exciting because you get like there's like a kid who looked like he was seven or younger at this program, and he was asking all of the like, you know, asking so many amazing questions, clearly, you know, was really interested in it. And everyone was asking for like follow-up resources. And it's just so exciting to like get to connect with other people who are super into it, but like, you know, are seven, so they're not at the university all the time. And yeah, it was really fun. It was really helpful for me to get to like try that, you know, with members of the public, just as a really informal, like, let's see what people do. And yeah, working with Dr. Tolson was really amazing.
Yeah, that's so. And so for people that want to maybe participate in this next year, because it's already happened this year.
Yeah, yeah, it's already passed this year.
How would you recommend they kind of sort of get involved? Because it, like, let's say it was COVID, how would they get involved in that?
So if you are part of the Faculty of Science and would like to participate, or, you know, even if you're not part of the Faculty of Science and would like to participate, I would suggest reaching out to Christine Sharp. She is in outreach with the Faculty of Science, and so she puts together a lot of these programs. I also did some programming for schools last year in a program that was called Agents of Science that she organized. So if you just generally want to be involved with science outreach at the UC, get in touch with Christine Sharp. She is really great. Mm-hmm. And if you want to look at the like science takeover library related things, I know that the Faculty of Science does have event listings, so it would be posted there. And the library has really interesting programming all the time. And they are, you know, moving a lot of their programming online for during COVID-19. I also volunteer with the library, not through like the university. And so they are also moving a lot of their stuff online, and they have really interesting programming going on all the time as well. So if you were following any of those streams, you should hopefully find out about it. And Science Literacy Week, like events for Science Literacy Week happen all over the country, and they have a national website. So if you just search Science Literacy Week, I'm sure you could also find out what's going on through them.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. A lot of really good stuff. Are we missing anything? Did you like have anything else that you were thinking you want to kind of talk about in relation to what's going on?
So I think I would say in all of the things that I do with tech, I think it's important because as technology, like obviously technology includes like language and, you know, forks. So really, technology has been shaping our lives since we started, you know, picking up hammers or picking up rocks to be hammers and stuff like that. But I think especially now, it seems like so much of our lives are entirely shaped by digital technology that can seem very impenetrable. And whether it's through, you know, like getting people using accessible technology platforms like Arduino, or whether it's through kind of explorations like the installations that I do, or facilitating kind of like interdisciplinary projects like I, you know, I think I try to do by building community in the CMD program. I think all of that helps make technology hopefully seem a little less inscrutable. And I think that's really important for helping people kind of like function in a society that is so mediated by digital technology.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of relating to that, if you could leave listeners with one piece of advice relating to what we talked about today and that whole bit about, you know, being more mindful about technology's impact, what would you say?
I would say, like, don't sell yourself short. You as a member of the public have all of the, like, skills and resources to engage with these issues. You are not too stupid to think about them. And I've had, you know, people tell me that they can't understand algorithms when I'm talking to them about my art. And that I was like, no, that's sometimes that's what they want you to think. Sometimes it's just like, it's not true. You know, we all have things to say about this conversation. It's something that we all need to be involved in. And if someone is trying to tell you, or if some kind of aspect of the system is making you feel like you don't have a way into this conversation, that's not true. And you should fight it and like make, do what you, if possible, and you can, if there's someone you can go to, like make your voice heard if you're concerned. And then also you, every one of us, like I think can definitely engage with these issues. It's not something that's totally inscrutable.
Yeah, that is awesome. Great advice, great advice. I guess final piece of the episode here is then, if people want to learn more about everything that we talked about, learn more about you and your projects and what you're up to, where can they find all of that good stuff?
Yeah. So I do have a website, that's katherineblair.com. So I have some info about my projects up there. You can also, email me. My name is Katherine, and then Blair is Blair. And my email, which I would be happy to chat with people from the University of Calgary or wider Calgary community, is katherine.blair@ucalgary.ca. And on Twitter, I'm at Kath Blair. I'm not very active on Twitter, but there I'm there.
Okay. That's awesome.
Come talk to me.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Kath, for coming onto the show. Really enjoyed learning about your art and exposing algorithms. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I had a really great time.
Thanks for tuning in to What the Tech, a podcast powered by the Computer Science Department of UCalgary. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. Also, follow us on Instagram at UofC_CPSC for more computer science content. If you have any questions or want to suggest future episode topics, you can also visit anchor.fm/whatthetech-ucalgary. There, you can leave us a voice message with your questions for a chance to get featured in future episodes. Thanks again for listening. Join us next week for another episode of What the Tech.
I've made a bunch of dresses that are controlled by people's brains using Arduino. It's like ridiculously easy. And so if you ever want to make any crazy projects, look up controlling things with brains, consumer EEG headsets. You can just buy online and then hook up to whatever you want. They're so cool. The ones that I have used a lot are called NeuroSky headsets, and they have like one sensor that kind of goes to your forehead, and then they have a ear clip that is like a reference electrode. They kind of like will measure the interference from your brain activity in the circuit between like the reference electrode and the one that's on your forehead. The chip in the headset does a lot of processing on the signal, and it will output attention level, a meditation level, as well as like the type of brain wave. And then it just like outputs it on its Bluetooth feed. So you can just like read it with anything. I usually use it to control lights and use it to control motors as well for some of my make fashion pieces. And it's like so crazily easy, insane.
Wow. Yeah, so love cool. It. That's great. Wow.
Well, it's very fun.
Definitely. Anyone listening.
Yeah.
Go check that out.
Make weird brain control things. Give yourself like telekinetic powers. It's a thing.
Yes.
You can just do it.
Well, that's perfect. That's so awesome.